Research reveals that cognitive therapy is more effective in treating depression and mood disorders than conventional psychotherapy or drug therapy. A group of psychiatrists and psychologists at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine developed cognitive therapy. The systematic application and scientific evaluation of this approach in treating clinical depression trace its origins to the innovative work of Dr. Aaron T. Beck, who began to refine his unique approach to mood transformation in the mid-1950s. The simple, effective mood control techniques of cognitive therapy provide rapid, symptomatic improvement, understanding self-control, prevention, and personal growth. Cognitive therapy is unique in the sense that it has been evaluated and validated at the highest academic levels. It is not another self-help pop psychology. Yet, it is practical and based on common sense, and you can make it work for you. The first principle of cognitive therapy is that all your moods are created by your cognitions or thoughts. Cognition refers to the way you look at things, your perceptions, mental attitudes, and beliefs. The second principle is that when you are feeling depressed, your thoughts are dominated by pervasive negativity. The third principle states that the twisted thinking, which contains gross distortions of reality, is a major cause of your suffering. Thus, you can learn to deal with your moods more effectively if you master methods that will help you pinpoint and eliminate the mental distortions which cause you to feel upset. As you begin to think more objectively, you will begin to feel better. A pilot study that compared cognitive therapy with drug therapy was carried out at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine to substantiate the effectiveness of cognitive therapy in treating severely depressed individuals without drugs, the speed of action of cognitive therapy, and the longevity of the results. Over 40 severely depressed patients were randomly assigned to two groups. One group was to receive individual cognitive therapy sessions and no drugs, while the other group would be treated with tofurnil and no therapy. 15 of the 19 patients treated with cognitive therapy had shown a substantial reduction of symptoms after 12 weeks of active treatment. An additional 2 individuals had improved but were still experiencing borderline to mild depression. Only 1 patient had dropped out of treatment, and 1 had not yet begun to improve at the end of this period. In contrast, only 5 of the 25 patients assigned to antidepressant drug therapy had shown complete recovery by the end of the 12-week period. 8 of these patients dropped out of therapy as a result of the adverse side effects of the medication, and 12 others showed no improvement or only partial improvement. Additionally, it was noted that by the end of the second week, there had been a pronounced reduction in suicidal thoughts among the cognitive therapy group. The findings from follow-up studies during the year after completion of treatment from the psychological tests, as well as the patient's own reports, confirmed that the cognitive therapy group continued to feel substantially better, and these differences were statistically significant. The relapse rate over the course of the year in the cognitive therapy group was less than half that observed in the drug patients. These were sizable differences that favored the patients treated with the new approach. This result does not suggest that you will never again have the blues after using cognitive methods to eliminate your current depression. Feeling better and getting better are two different things. While you can feel better spontaneously, getting better requires a systematic application and reapplication of the methods that will lift your mood when the need arises. The Beck Depression Inventory (BDI) is a veritable mood measuring device that detects the presence of depression and accurately rates its severity. Diagnosis is the first step in the cure of depression. There are 21 questions that have been developed to help you detect your level of depression. Your total score can be as low as 0 and as high as 63. The classification of the scores are as follows: 1 to 10, normal range 11 to 16, mild mood disturbance 17 to 20, borderline clinical depression 21 to 30, moderate depression 31 to 40, severe depression over 40, extreme depression. Despite the simplicity of this questionnaire, it is a highly sophisticated tool for diagnosing depression, as many research studies have shown. Take the BDI test at regular intervals to assess your progress objectively. The methods and principles outlined in this book are safe for all depressed individuals to try to treat themselves. The key to feeling better as soon as possible is the decision to try to help yourself. You should seek professional help if you consistently score a minimum of 17 for at least 2 consecutive weeks on the BDI scale. If you score 2 or 3 in questions 9 and 20, which ask about suicidal thoughts and physical pain respectively, You display symptoms that indicate the existence of a mental disturbance that may need psychiatric treatment. You are having manic episodes. If your score is under 17 and you do not have a strong suicidal urge, hallucinations, or symptoms of mania, you can help yourself get better by using the methods outlined in this book. You can convert the energy spent on depression into vital and creative living that lets you enjoy your life and work. Negative thoughts that fill your mind are the actual cause of your self-defeating emotions. Every time you feel depressed about something, try to identify a corresponding negative thought you had prior to and during the depression. Because these thoughts have actually created your bad mood, by learning to restructure them, you can change your mood. Negative thoughts that have become part of your life are called automatic thoughts. Your emotions result entirely from the way you look at things. It is an obvious neurological fact that before you can experience any event, you must process it with your mind and give it meaning. You must understand what is happening to you before you can feel it. There are 10 cognitive distortions that form the basis of all your depression. These distortions are like a radio signal that is not properly tuned to the right frequency. Only that in this case, it is a mental tuning. The distortions are all or nothing thinking, overgeneralization, mental filter disqualifying the positive, jumping to conclusions, magnification and minimization, emotional reasoning, should statements, labeling and mislabeling, personalization. By taking a simple self-assessment quiz, you can strengthen your understanding of the 10 distortions. Feelings aren't facts. Feelings only mirror your thoughts. Once you invite depression through an automatic series of cognitive distortions, your feelings and actions will reinforce each other in a self-perpetuating vicious cycle. It is impossible for the emotions that are produced by your thoughts to determine the validity of those thoughts. The key is to avoid painful feelings based on mental distortions because they are neither valid nor desirable. The modifications in illogical thinking patterns will have a profound effect on your moods and increase your capacity for productive living. Depressed people see themselves as deficient in the qualities they value most highly, and they feel defeated, defective, deserted, and deprived. A poor self-image is the magnifying glass that can transform a trivial mistake or an imperfection into an overwhelming symbol of personal defeat. Unfortunately, when you are depressed, you may not be alone in your personal inadequacy. In many cases, you will be so persuasive and persistent in your maladaptive belief that you are defective and no good, you may lead your family and friends, and even your therapist, into accepting this idea of yourself. First, you cannot earn worth through what you do. Achievements cannot bring you self-worth but happiness. Self-worth based on accomplishments is a pseudo-esteem. Only your own sense of self-worth determines how you feel. One of the cardinal features of cognitive therapy is that it stubbornly refuses to buy into your sense of worthlessness. There are specific methods of building self-esteem. The first method is to talk back to that internal critic. A sense of worthlessness is created by your internal self-critical dialogue. Train yourself to recognize and write down the self-critical thoughts as they go through your mind, learn why these are distorted, and practice talking back to them so as to develop a more realistic self-evaluation system. The second method is called mental biofeedback. It involves monitoring your negative thoughts with a wrist counter. Click the button each time a negative thought about yourself crosses your mind, be on the constant alert for such thoughts. At the end of the day, note your daily total score and write it down in a logbook. The daily total will rise and then fall after reaching a plateau. Systematic self-monitoring frequently helps develop increased self-control. As you learn to stop haranguing yourself, you will begin to feel much better. So, when you are upset, remember to zero in on those automatic negative thoughts and write them down. Read over the list of 10 cognitive distortions. Substitute a more objective thought for the one which made you look down on yourself. People are not only thinkers, but they are also doers, so it is not surprising that you can substantially change the way you feel by changing the way you act. One of the most destructive aspects of depression is the way it paralyzes your willpower. In its mildest form, you may simply procrastinate about doing a few odious chores. As your lack of motivation intensifies, virtually any activity appears so difficult that you become overwhelmed by the urge to do nothing. To find the real cause of motivation paralysis, we have to look to cognitive therapy. The mindsets that are most commonly associated with procrastination include hopelessness, helplessness, overwhelming yourself, jumping to conclusions, self-labeling, undervaluing the rewards, perfectionism, fear of failure, fear of success, fear of disapproval or criticism, coercion and resentment, low frustration tolerance, guilt and self-blame. The following self-activation techniques might help you deal with your brand of procrastination. The daily activity schedule. It consists of two columns, namely, the prospective column and the retrospective column. The former contains an hour-by-hour plan for what you would like to accomplish each day, while the latter contains what you actually did during the day. It may be the same or different from what you planned. Label each activity with the letter M for mastery and P for pleasure. Then include the degree of difficulty for each task using a rating between 0 and 5. If you adhere to the schedule, you will find your motivation increasing. The anti-procrastination sheet. Using this sheet, you can train yourself to test negative predictions. Each day, write down in the appropriate column one or more tasks you have been putting off. If the task requires substantial time and effort, it is best to break it down into a series of small steps so that each one can be completed in 15 minutes or less. Now write down in the next column how difficult you predict each step of the task will be, using a 0 to 100% scale. If you imagine the task will be easy, you can write down a low estimate such as 10 to 20%, for harder tasks, use 80 to 90%. In the next column, write down your prediction of how satisfying and rewarding it will be to complete each phase of the task, again using the percentage system. Once you've recorded these predictions, go ahead and complete the first step of the task. After you've completed each step, take note of how difficult it actually turned out to be, as well as the amount of pleasure you gained from doing it. Record this information in the last two columns, again using the percentage system. Daily record of dysfunctional thoughts. This record can be used to great advantage when you are overwhelmed by the urge to do nothing. Simply write down the thoughts that run through your mind when you think about a particular task. This will immediately show you what your problem is. Then write down appropriate rational responses that show these thoughts as unrealistic. This will help you mobilize enough energy to take that first difficult step. Once you've done that, you will gain momentum and be on your way. If you are a procrastinator, you probably aren't aware of this. So you lie around in bed waiting for inspiration to strike. When someone suggests you do something, you whine, "I don't feel like it." Well, who said you were supposed to feel like it? If you wait until you're in the mood, you may wait forever. Your irritability quotient refers to the amount of anger and annoyance you tend to absorb and harbor in your daily life. The irritability quotient is measured by a list of 25 potential upsetting situations which are estimated using a simple rationing scale from 0 to 4. 0 being the mildest of irritability or annoyance and ascends to 4, which is the most intense. This scale was developed by Dr. Raymond W. Novacco of the Program in Social Ecology at the University of California, Irvine. The full scale contains 80 items. Focus your efforts on getting what you want. Negotiating principles can work effectively in angry situations. Instead of telling people off, compliment them on what they did right, disarm them and clarify your point of view again calmly and firmly. There are 10 things that should be known about anger. 1. The events of this world do not make you angry. Your thoughts create the anger. 2. Anger does not help, it immobilizes you in your hostility to no productive end. 3. The thoughts that generate anger more often than not will contain distortions. 4. Ultimately, your anger is caused by your belief that someone is acting unfairly or some event is unjust. 5. If you learn to see the world through other people's eyes, you will often be surprised to realize their actions are not unfair from their point of view. 6. Other people usually do not feel they deserve your punishment. Therefore, your retaliation is unlikely to help you achieve any positive goals in your interactions with them. 7. A great deal of your anger involves your defense against loss of self-esteem when people criticize you, disagree with you, or fail to behave as you want them to. Such anger is always inappropriate because only your own negative distorted thoughts can cause you to lose self-esteem. 8. Frustration results from unmet expectations. Since the event that disappointed you was a part of reality, it was realistic. 9. It is just childish pouting to insist you have the right to be angry. 10. You rarely need your anger in order to be human. It is not true that you will be an unfeeling robot without it. The cognitive theory provides a kind of emotional calculus that makes certain thorny philosophical and psychological questions much easier to resolve.
Guilt is the emotion you will experience when you have the following thoughts: I have done something I should not have because my actions fall short of my moral standards and violate my concept of fairness. This bad behavior shows that I am a bad person, or that I have an evil streak, or a tainted character, or a rotten core, etc. This concept of the badness of self is central to guilt. In its absence, your hurtful action might lead to a healthy feeling of remorse but not guilt. Remorse stems from the undistorted awareness that you have willfully and unnecessarily acted in a hurtful manner toward yourself or another person that violates your personal ethical standards. Using these criteria, you can now readily determine whether your feelings represent a normal and healthy sense of remorse or a self-defeating, distorted sense of guilt. Ask yourself, did I consciously and willfully do something bad, unfair, or needlessly hurtful that I should not have? Am I labeling myself a bad or tainted person because of this action? Am I feeling a realistic regret or remorse, which results from an empathic awareness of the negative impact of my action? Am I learning from my error and developing a strategy for change, or am I moping and ruminating non-productively or even punishing myself in a destructive manner? Some methods that will allow getting rid of inappropriate guilty feelings and maximize your self-respect are daily record of dysfunctional thoughts should removal techniques. Ask yourself, who says I should? Where is it written that I should? Learn to stick to your guns anti-whiner technique. Simply finding a way to agree with the winner Mori Moner method. Finding a way to agree with what a person is saying, and then distracting the moaner by commenting on something positive in the complaint, developing perspective.
Sadness is a normal emotion created by realistic perceptions that describe a negative event involving loss or disappointment in an undistorted way. When a depression clearly appears after obvious stress such as ill health, the death of a loved one, or a business reversal, it is sometimes called reactive depression. It has no adaptive or positive function whatsoever and represents one of the worst forms of suffering. Its only redeeming value is the growth you experience when you recover from it. When a genuinely negative event occurs, your emotions will be created exclusively by your thoughts and perceptions. Your feelings will result from the meaning you attach to what happens. A substantial portion of your suffering will be due to the distortions in your thoughts. When you eliminate these distortions, you will find that coping with a real problem will become less painful. Some of the things leading to depression include loss of life, loss of limbs, loss of job, and the loss of a loved one. Sadness without suffering. The question then arises, what is the nature of healthy sadness when it is not at all contaminated by distortion? Or to put it another way, does sadness really need to involve suffering? The episode involved a letting go, a feeling of closure, and a sense of goodbye. This was in no way frightening or terrible, but in fact, it was peaceful and warm, and added a sense of richness to my experience of life. The more severe and intractable the depression is, the more extraordinary and delicious the taste of happiness and self-esteem once it is over. There are several differences between feeling better and getting better. Feeling better simply indicates that the painful symptoms have temporarily disappeared. Getting better implies understanding the reason for your depression, knowing why and how you got better, acquiring self-confidence and self-esteem, identifying the deeper causes of your depression. Silent assumptions are equations with which you define your personal worth. It represents your value system, your personal philosophy, the stuff on which you base your self-esteem. There are two different ways to identify silent assumptions. The first is a startlingly effective method called the vertical arrow technique, which allows you to probe your inner psyche. The second one is the dysfunctional attitude scale, DAS, which was developed by Dr. Arlene Weissman as a simpler method for eliciting the silent assumption. Some steps to transforming self-esteem to emotional reality are the cost-benefit analysis, rewrite the assumption, the self-respect blueprint, verbal techniques. Rejection is never your fault. One of the greatest pains a person can try to inflict on you is through rejection. The key to emotional enlightenment is the knowledge that only your thoughts can affect your mood. Dependency means that you are unable to assume responsibility for your emotional life. The truth is that being lonely is undeniably emotionally inferior to be alone. The first step in changing any personal value is to determine if it works more to your advantage or disadvantage. How can I attain self-esteem if my worth doesn't come from my success or from love or approval? The first path is to acknowledge that human worth is just an abstraction, it doesn't exist. The second is to realize that worthy and worthless are just empty concepts when applied to a human being. The third path to self-esteem is to recognize that there is only one way you can lose a sense of self-worth, by persecuting yourself with unreasonable, illogical negative thoughts. Self-esteem can be defined as the state that exists when you are not arbitrarily haranguing and abusing yourself but choose to fight back against those automatic thoughts with meaningful rational responses. The fourth path to self-esteem is your decision to treat yourself like a beloved friend. The harder you strive for perfection, the worse your disappointment will become because it's only an abstraction, a concept that doesn't fit reality. The ultimate victory is the victory of living, choosing to live life at its fullest. If you are suicidal, it is of great importance for you to evaluate these impulses in a matter-of-fact manner, using your common sense. The following factors put you in a high-risk group. If you are severely depressed and feel hopeless, if you have a history of suicide attempts, if you have made concrete plans and preparations for suicide, if no deterrents are holding you back. If one or more of these factors apply to you, then it is vital to get professional intervention and treatment immediately. The conviction of hopelessness is one of the most curious aspects of depressive illness. In fact, the degree of hopelessness experienced by seriously depressed patients who have an excellent prognosis is usually greater than in terminal malignancy patients with a poor prognosis. It is of great importance to expose the illogic that lurks behind your hopelessness as soon as possible in order to prevent an actual suicide attempt. The modern era of research on the chemistry of mood disorders began several decades ago, when it was hypothesized that depression might result from decreased levels of certain brain substances known technically as amines. They are chemical transmitters which nerves use to send messages to each other. Amines are the brain's biochemical mailmen, particularly concentrated in the limbic system, a primitive brain region which appears to be involved in mood regulation. Certain negative attitudes and irrational thoughts can interfere with proper drug treatment. However, we have also found that in some cases an antidepressant appears to provide some needed leverage that can facilitate your efforts to help yourself. Conclusion. Cognitive therapy provides a trusted means of dealing with blue moods. Considering the fact that it helps to avoid the side effects of drug therapy and it actually helps depressed people to get better, it is a preferred method to conventional psychotherapy. Try this, use the procrastination and retrospective column suggested in this book to overcome the problem of procrastination.